Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
And welcome to Africa Link. I'm Mark Caldwell in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, alarm over Ebola in Nigeria as people under medical surveillance in Lagos leave the city.
It's criminal. It's an attempt by this individual to create public health disaster. Lots of people will be infected and lots of people will die.
And we hear about efforts in Rwanda to crack down on human trafficking.
It dehumanizes the victims, and sometimes victims lose their lives.
Those stories and more coming up in the next 25 minutes.
Top story.
Senegal has recorded its first case of Ebola. The infected person is a young man from Guinea, bringing the number of West African countries hit by the disease to 5. In Nigeria, meanwhile, there have been calls for tough action against people found spreading the virus. This follows reports from Lagos that people supposed to be under medical surveillance because they had been in contact with Ebola victim Patrick Sawyer have slipped out of the city. Nigeria has just reported its first Ebola case outside Lagos. Sam Olukoya reports.
Just when Nigerian authorities thought they had confined Ebola to Lagos, unknown to them, an ECOWAS diplomat who had contact with the Liberian-American Patrick Sawyer had sneaked out to Port Harcourt, 600 kilometers away, to secretly receive treatment at a time he was supposed to be under surveillance in Lagos. Professor Onyebuchi Chukwu is Nigeria's health minister.
Primary contact of Mr. Sawyer had evaded our surveillance team in the last week of July 2014 and travelled out of Lagos to Port Harcourt, where, as we now understand, he consulted with a doctor and was apparently treated for some symptoms. 5 days later, following a manhunt for him, he returned to Lagos, by which time he was found to be without symptoms.
But the patients left behind a potential health crisis. More than 100 people are at risk of Ebola from the doctor who treated him. These include the doctor's patients, health workers at the two hospitals where the doctor was treated before he died, and guests at a hotel where the doctor was suspected to have secretly treated the diplomat. Already, the doctor's wife is showing symptoms of Ebola. In a touch of irony, Ebola was spread out of Lagos the same way it came into the city. Like the diplomat, Sawyer, who brought Ebola to Nigeria from Liberia, sneaked into Lagos at a time he was supposed to be under surveillance in his home country. The conduct of both men has angered many ordinary Nigerians who are now calling for penalty against those who willfully spread Ebola. Mayowa Adebola is one of such Nigerians.
These individuals who have refused to listen to the instructions that have been given them, that they are under surveillance to monitor the spread of the epidemic of Ebola, and has left where they've been told to be and had traveled and had spread the epidemic to other states. I think it's a deliberate act, and I believe such people should be tried. It's criminal. It's an attempt by this individual to create public health disaster. Lots of people will be infected and lots of people will die.
Rotimi Amaechi, the governor of River State, whose capital is Port Harcourt, has in a radio and television broadcast appealed to the people not to panic.
We have the material and human resources we need to fight and defeat the deadly virus. Officials from the Federal Ministry of Health and other international agencies are already here working with the State Minister of Health to contain and combat the virus.
But in a state where most of the communities live in the inaccessible creeks of the Niger Delta, the spread of Ebola to these inaccessible locations could create a major public health problem.
Sam Olukoya, first human trials on an Ebola vaccine start in the United States next week. They will involve a product made by GlaxoSmithKline and US government scientists. The trials will assess the safety of the vaccine and whether it will be effective. Similar trials are to start soon in the UK, Mali and the Gambia. DW reporter Peter Hiller has been following the story, and I asked him how significant these trials were for efforts to combat the disease.
Well, if these trials prove to be successful, that would be a huge step forward in the fight against Ebola. So let's assume this vaccine protected effectively against the virus without any major side effects, and also for a price that could be afforded in developing countries. That would certainly help prevent further outbreaks. But I do not think that doctors will be able to contain the outbreak that we're seeing right now with a vaccine. Because usually it takes 10 years to develop and to test a new vaccine. And even if for this vaccine authorities will fast track the process, they will put a lot of public money into this, so they will make the process quicker. I still think it will take months before we will see an anti-Ebola shot available in high quantities.
One of the charges leveled against pharmaceutical companies is that they are failing to invest in and develop treatment for Ebola. Is this now changing?
We can certainly see that companies have geared up their efforts. The trials in the United States, you said it, are not the only ones. We see similar efforts in Britain with tests in Mali and the Gambia. So, yes, companies are now starting to invest more time and money into vaccines, into drugs against Ebola. But what I see, what I read, is that it is still mainly money grants from governments that make this possible. So it is public money mainly.
Clearly, prevention is better than cure. What's the main message that health officials are trying to get across to people in the affected countries?
Yeah, while we still wait for a vaccine, the only way to prevent contracting Ebola at the moment is still to avoid close contact with the bodily fluids of infected people or with those who have recently died of the disease. So people should try to avoid touching bodies, should try to avoid touching blood or vomit of those infected. And of course, if you think that you might have a fever or you start feeling sick, go see a doctor. That's the best chance that you have.
This outbreak isn't over and it's showing no signs of slowing down, is it?
No, on the contrary, it is still accelerating. The World Health Organization estimates that this week alone more people have died from Ebola than in any week before during this latest outbreak. Well, there was one case now in Senegal. The Senegalese government just reported a new case in Dakar. So it has spread to another country. Well, the disease is clearly continuing to spread at the moment.
DW reporter Peter Hiller.
Africa Link, bringing you the story behind the story.
Stephen Davis is an international advisor employed by the Nigerian government with a remarkable story to tell about the Islamist insurgency.
At this stage last year, sitting down with the 24 leaders of Boko Haram, nutting out the last parts of a peace deal. And that was sabotaged.
Davis alleges that two Nigerian officials were behind that sabotage. He described them as sponsors of Boko Haram and named them as the former governor of Borno State, Ali Modo Sherif, and Lieutenant General Asibuiki Ihejerika. German journalist Heinrich Bergstresser is an expert on Nigeria. I asked him how credible Stephen Davis's claims were.
The statements are absurd because Senator Ali Modo Sharif, the former governor of Borno State, he was one of those who made Boko Haram prominent. He used them in the political process in Borno State, and then he got rid of them by getting them killed, the leadership killed. And this is so absurd now to claim that this person, the same person now, is sponsoring Boko Haram, a group that he was fighting for a long, long time in the between 2007 and 2009. And at the same time, the general, Ihejerika, he was the general. Of course, he was leading the army in the fight against Boko Haram, and he was one of the profiteers, was one of those who established a business against terrorism and a business in favor of the generals and the colonels and the lieutenant colonels.
What possible motive then could Stephen Davis have for making these claims?
No, I think he's just used as an instrument for the Nigerian government, because this is now an easy way out to deviate the responsibility of the Nigerian government from this anti-terror war, and especially concerning the fate of the Chibok girls. And in this respect, it's very useful for the government to have somebody from outside who pretends to be an expert in this field. Maybe he is, but standing somewhere in Australia or in the United States and then claiming such serious allegations, this is, I think, a scandal.
But he does say that President Jonathan had made huge progress in peace discussions with Boko Haram and that they were sabotaged by the sponsors of Boko Haram. It has a credible ring to it, doesn't it?
I doubt that very much, because now Stephen Davis can stand somewhere and pretending that he had found the right way and the way out to get the Chibok girls released and to get a peace deal with Boko Haram. But in fact, people from inside, like the former general and head of state Obasanjo, also started an initiative to get the girls released, but he was stopped by the president. And this, I think, is a scandal as well. So Stephen Davis cannot claim that he alone was at the center of the work to get the girls released and to get a peace deal done. But in fact, other people on the ground were also very prominent and trying to do their best to get something done. But this, nobody talks about this anymore. But now Stephen Davis is standing somewhere and looking like a Superman who was able to do that, but he was prevented from doing it. And this, I think, is a scandal as well. And he behaves in a similar way like Nigerian politicians behave when they want to increase their own credibility get the other subdued.
Journalist and Nigeria expert Heinrich Bergstresse.
Human rights.
Human trafficking is on the rise in Rwanda. Traffickers target young girls, promising them work and opportunities to study abroad. As they are often initially contacted by email or social media, they don't suspect that they are dealing with criminals. To put this into perspective, Burundi and the DRC are considered the worst offenders in human trafficking. According to a UN index, Rwanda's record is on a par with that of Uganda or Kenya. From Kigali, Flora Kaitesi reports.
It is bars and nightclubs like these ones that have been singled out as some of the so-called hunting zones for human traffickers. Although it may be difficult to identify them, Rwanda National Police says that many of the traffickers prey on young people that frequent such spots. Police further says that many of the victims are taken to neighboring countries like Uganda and sometimes shipped off as far as South Africa and Asia. Tony Kuramba, the Deputy Director of the Criminal Investigations Department and head of Interpol Rwanda chapter, warns that despite the identified cases, there is a huge risk that there may be hidden cases.
They withdraw their travel documents. They are put in confinements where they can't communicate. So it's most likely there might be more cases than we already know. In this particular crime of human trafficking, it's not a matter of numbers or statistics. For example, compared to other crimes, this is the most serious crime because it affects a human being. It dehumanizes the victims, and sometimes victims lose their lives.
The trend has raised widespread fears among Rwandan parents. Joseph Karemera is one of the parents. He blames parents for not keeping an eye on their children.
As a parent, the recent cases that have been talked of or heard about in our country, Rwanda, about human trafficking of girls is really, it's not only scaring but worth thinking about at length, because these are our daughters. I think you've heard of how some parents at the age of 12 or 11, they send their girls to boarding schools. But when they leave school, I don't know how she leaves school. But you find that most cases, these girls find their way home, because we've even heard of cases where some kids even take 2 or 3 days before they get home.
The National Children's Commission has so far received 11 victims of human trafficking, all of whom are girls who were rescued from neighbouring Uganda. Zaina Nyiramatama, the Commission's executive secretary, says many of the teenagers, who are mostly promised work and opportunities to study abroad, are often traumatized by their experience in unknown territories. They arrive here very traumatized, so we offer them counseling. Some have special problems. For instance, one of them came back pregnant. Others are school dropouts, and we take them back to school. As the victims are often too young, human rights organizations in Rwanda are worried that this vicious crime is stripping them of their right to education, as many drop out of school. Geoffrey Okello, an independent human rights activist, believes dealing with human trafficking demands concerted efforts.
Human trafficking is a crime against the fundamental rights of children and human beings. I urge parents to play a significant role in the protection of their children, because they are supposed to be in schools. They have a right to education, because when they are detached from them, that's when issues like human trafficking come in, and they violate, of course, their fundamental rights.
Although much of the blame has been heavily put on the shoulders of parents, Rwanda's senior-most government officials have called for collective efforts and urgent action from security organs and raising awareness among the general population in order to put an end to human trafficking.
Flora Kaitesi in Kigali. You're listening to Africa Link, coming to you from Deutsche Welle in Bonn, Germany. A joint report by the United Nations and the government of Zimbabwe concludes that the country has made significant improvements in its social sector since 2009, such as bringing down infant mortality. But as Columbus Mavhunga reports, many Zimbabweans still lack basic amenities such as clean drinking water.
The social sector system in Zimbabwe over the past 20 years has been on near collapse mode. More than 5,000 lives having succumbed to a cholera outbreak in 2008 and 2009. That was mainly because many Zimbabweans did not have access to safe drinking water. On Friday, the UN government report said only 34% now did not have access to safe drinking water. Itai Rusike heads the Community Working Group on Health, one of the civic organizations fighting to ensure that all Zimbabweans enjoy their right to health. I asked him if indeed all was well in Zimbabwe, judging from the report.
The situation on the ground, unfortunately, some of the indicators that have been highlighted in the report, it shows otherwise. I'll give you an example of improved source of water. Yes, people have got taps in their houses, but is the water coming out? And what is the quality of that water?
In Zimbabwe, citizens can go for days, weeks, or even months with dry taps due to power cuts or dilapidated systems that pump water. That has forced some citizens to rely on unsafe sources of water, such as rivers and unprotected wells. Speaking at the launch of the report, Gerald Gwinji, the permanent secretary in Zimbabwe's Ministry of Health, said it was not only the issue of water that needed to be addressed.
If we look at the under five indicators, for instance, there is improvement. But if we subdivide that group, we find that we still have challenges in the neonatal period, and therefore we need to focus on that, and that will further improve on our indicators. We are glad our maternal mortality ratio is falling, and I think that is a definite trend. And we take cognizance of the fact that these are results of the last 5 years leading to this.
The report released by the United Nations and the government of Zimbabwe said the country's social sector has made significant improvement since 2009, when international donors chipped in. UN Children's Fund UNICEF head in Zimbabwe, Reza Hossain said the country had started enjoying the benefits of the Health Transition Fund. Zimbabwe's maternity and infant mortality rates had declined significantly.
The governments, development partners, UN agencies, civil societies and others have worked hard in the past 5 years to get the system up and running again, and also to rebuild and strengthen the human resources that was so drained in the system.
And that report was compiled by Columbus Mavhunga in Harare.
USA.
Let's hear now what you have to say about the stories we've been covering on this programme. Abubakar Jolu joined me in the studio shortly before we went on the air.
Hi, Mark. The Nigerian soldiers should stop believing that Boko Haram is better armed than they are. Boko Haram has no helicopter, tanks, or many other types of heavy weapons. That's according to Peter Chomdeng in South Sudan.
We've been reporting that hundreds of Nigerian soldiers fled across the border to Cameroon over fears of attacks from the Islamist sect Boko Haram. It comes after the group declared a caliphate in a northern Nigerian town.
Peter goes on to say, the fear of dying can only be factual reason for why hundreds of men in military uniforms fled from an enemy that has threatened the security of a nation. Shame on those fleeing the fight against Boko Haram. Many thanks to you, Africa Link. That does sound very strong, doesn't it?
A bit uncompromising.
And now, like you mentioned at the beginning of the program, we have two partner stations in Uganda. Smart FM 89.0 in Jinja and Elgon FM 101.4 in Bali. I managed to reach Mwanguzi Michael David, Programs Director of Smart FM, and this is what he had to say about the partnership.
Our dear listener, you are now free to enjoy the Sierra News Bulletins and the Africa League program. As it is always said, Africa is more than a headline. So the Africa League is on every weekday, Monday to Friday at midnight, Ugandan time. Enjoy, and thank you, Dr. for this new partnership. You know, we can gain a lot from it, and our listeners just can gain a lot from it as they get to share what is going on in Africa, covered in a more broad perspective way. Thank you very much.
And a warm welcome to listeners to Smart FM and Elgon FM, both in Uganda.
And also a very new listener club in Harper, Maryland County in Liberia, have been busy in public awareness campaign on the raging Ebola virus disease. Alison Dacto is their program's director, and he told me how worried people in Harper Town are because of the poor quality of the phone line. I had to voice over the clip.
They are worried because there is fear for it.
They are worried because many here have never seen the impact of Ebola. When we go to the communities and tell them about Ebola, they are really afraid. But what we mainly tell them is prevention. They can prevent themselves from getting Ebola by washing their hands, not to hug and not to shake hands. These are the kinds of messages we tell them.
Not to shake hands, mostly we tell them this message.
That's all from me. If it's Friday, TLC. Now over to you, Mark.
Thank you, Abubakar. And you can respond to topics covered on Africa Link or on our website, dw.de/Africa, by sending us a text message on +491 60 957 595 10, an email to feedback.africa@dw.de, or a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. And your say will be back again at the same time next week.
Listen to Africa Link where and when you want. Subscribe to our podcast and you will get the latest edition sent to you. Log on to mediacenter.dw.de/English/podcasts and look out for the Africa Link podcast. Africa Link, bringing you the story where and when you want it.
A reminder now of our main stories. There are calls in Nigeria for tough penalties for people caught spreading the Ebola virus. Human trials on a potential vaccine for Ebola start in the United States next week. We've also been hearing about human trafficking in Rwanda and a drop in infant mortality in Zimbabwe. And there we come to the end of this edition of Africa Link. Isaac Mugabe will be here next week. Do try and join him. Until the next time, this is Mark Caldwell in Bonn.